Welcome in to our PGA Championship preview here on Five Clubs. I will be joined momentarily by Taylor Zarzer, not only PGA Tour Live, but also of the PGA Tour Radio Network, Johnson Wagner, Brendan DeYoung, as we talk about the major that was moved to May starting in 2019, the PGA Championship, and where they're going, Valhalla. Valhalla is a venue. Scheffler in the train that he is currently driving. Rory, Spieth, Rahm, Koepka, and so many other elements of this championship. It's coming up. Part one of our PGA Championship preview. Golf Pride has done it again. The brand new Golf Pride reverse taper putter grips are the best I've ever used. And I didn't just get it. I've had it for months. And they have three to choose from. The round, the pistol, and the flat. The reverse taper putter design has a slim upper hand and a larger lower hand. I have never, and I promise you never, made as many putts as I had since I made this switch. You need to get the Golf Pride reverse taper putter grip today. And with that, welcome in, yes, the PGA Championship preview. Four wide, which is a rare occurrence around here. Very nice to have Taylor Zarzer here. What do we contract you for? Once, twice
just
a year?
Just once or twice a year, yeah.
Very nice. It's a good setup for you. This event, there's a lot to get to here. But before we get to Valhalla, PGA and all that, I want to ask all of you, because we've had a month to kind of understand why the Masters, in terms of the broader audience, the linear audience, the traditional television audience was down. Brendan, you have an idea? Do you have a thought as to why 20% less people on the TV side watched the most famous event in the sport?
I think, Gary, that the stars are not firing. The biggest star of all that is firing, he's not compelling. That's kind of what I would put my finger on. Scottie Scheffler is brilliantly boring to watch him play golf right now. It's not compelling. To me, that would be the number one reason why things are down a little bit.
I've always wanted to be brilliantly boring.
And yeah, I think that's why we all admire him so much. It's not, I don't think you're saying that as a criticism
nope.
at all.
No, it, no.
But that's well put. And yeah, he doesn't make a mistake ever. And I think the thing that almost all of us connect to is the drama associated with it, a great athlete, and the ups and downs it takes and the adversity that you face in order to be successful. What adversity is he facing? Yep. It's incredible. Like, he hits to this correct side of the green with every single shot. On top of that, no one's challenging him. If you were to list the things that we love most about men's competitive golf, the back nine on Sunday at Augusta National would have to be on one hand, if not one finger. Well, there was no drama. It was over by the time we got to all those holes that everyone watching knows so much about. So that's a huge factor. I do think that the fact that all of us are so fed up with how fractured the game is and the fatigue that the casual fan has with that, clearly they're investing their time in other sports and, you know, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, women's college basketball, men's college basketball. I think that they've invested their time in those things and said, you know what, I've had enough of all this friction in golf. I think that's probably another factor. But I do think that if we had some drama, like Brendan said, on Sunday, then it would mask some of the issues we're dealing with.
Yeah, don't we normally, though, cast everything aside because it is the Masters? Like, we feel cleansed. Like, all this turbulence, all this, you know, consternation. Maybe people can't right now. I don't know. You're a TV guy now. You're a big-time TV guy.
I love this.
Radio, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Radio, too.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially
the Masters. PGA
Tour Radio, Masters Let's Radio, go. PGA Championship Radio.
Lead analyst, PGA Championship Radio.
You're damn right you are. Why do you think? Do you have a different idea?
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with Brendan. Had Jordan Spieth been pushing Scheffler, or had you had a Justin Thomas or somebody that was a fan favorite, I think it would have made a difference. And like Taylor said, too, the drama all happened between 9 and 11. I mean, Scottie Scheffler spins it back down to a kick in, 6 inches, almost goes in the hole on 9. Meanwhile, Colin Morikawa is making double on that hole out of the left bunker. And then Oberg and Morikawa both rinse it on 11, and it was over. You give Scottie Scheffler the ability to play conservative coming down the stretch at Augusta, and not that he was that conservative. He went for the 13th green, hit it on, but hit it on the left side right where he needed to. And then 15, he goes for the green, hits it in the front right bunker. He was just never in jeopardy of making a mistake. And I personally love watching boring golf, but for the casual fan, it needs to be compelling.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, a football podcast, soccer as you guys call it, and they were talking about Manchester City. How clinically efficient they are makes it boring to watch. Scottie Scheffler is that way on the golf course right now. He is clinically efficient. He doesn't make mistakes. He's in the middle of the fairway. He's in the middle of the green. He's putting 15 feet for birdie.
We talked about this on the Masters broadcast and on some of our talk shows. It reminds me some of Pete Sampras in tennis in the 90s.
I like that one.
You know, I mean, he didn't seek any attention, but he also was clinical out there. A guy that Johnson and I see from time to time here in Charlotte, Jimmy Johnson, was that way in NASCAR with the way, and he still doesn't seek any attention. He's as level-headed of a person as you would ever find. I think all of us admire Sampras, Scheffler, and Jimmy Johnson, but there also is, they're brilliantly boring.
You mentioned if we had this or we had that, doesn't that speak to kind of how fragile things are, that we need like eclipses to happen in order to draw just what we are used to, not to rise to a level that maybe you go, wow, what a spike. They did have an eclipse on Monday at Augusta National. And by the way, anybody better prepared for anything than they are? They're handing out glasses to everybody with the logo on it. I'll keep those forever. I agree with you. Spieth has traction. He's a sticky personality. The other part, are we discounting? And I'm kind of answering my own question here, because this technology has been in place more so there than anywhere else. They understand the digital product better than anybody. This is just the traditional linear product that we're talking about. But it was that way last year, and it's 20% down. I think that this sport is also trying to get their head around the idea that the Tiger thing might be over. That's not easy. That's not going to be an easy thing. And this transition, it hasn't been absolute, because he won the Masters in 2019, and because he's such a once-in-a-100-year experience, we hold out hope that maybe he can contend again. And he did make the weekend on a Friday where it was ripping out there and he's grinding his guts out. And you're thinking, okay, he's kind of in the TV window on Saturday. And then it obviously got sideways for him. I think the sport is in a precarious place right now. And I think that Scheffler, the one thing he can do, and that's how we'll transition to Valhalla, if he can continue to win golf tournaments, his personality becomes less of a variable about people watching, because people are going to start going, Brendan, oh my God, is this guy winning again? It doesn't matter the sport. It doesn't matter the personality. If you separate yourself, people take notice of that.
Yeah, very much so. But it's going to take him winning a lot more, I think.
How much more?
I think he needs to knock off another major this year.
Okay.
I think he needs to knock off another 4 or 5 wins this year, where it's an historically
good... A 9-win season.
I think it's got to be a historically good season, because he's not that compelling, and he likes it that way. His golf game mirrors his personality 100%. He's... no wasted time, no wasted motion. He's not wasting time on social media. He's not putting himself out there. And his golf game's the exact same way.
I think dominance is exciting. I think he's starting to get on the cusp of being the guy we want him to be without... I think his personality is incredible. He's authentically himself.
I love the guy.
I mean, he's authentically himself, and I think he's unafraid to speak about his faith and about what that means. And his family, he doesn't give you a whole lot, but I respect it.
But is it going to draw in a casual golf fan?
Probably not.
No.
No, and I think it's great that you love it. One of our buddies, Webb Simpson, has a podcast, and he had Scotty on right after he won the Masters. And to your point, he's so comfortable in his own skin and in his faith and who he is. And I think all of us admire that about him. But I'm with Brendan. I think that it will take, if he wins, to specifically answer your question, if he wins the PGA Championship, then I think we have something that everybody is going to get attracted to and say, okay, we might be watching something that almost never comes around. And at that point, it doesn't matter if he's not seeking the attention. We're all going to connect to it. The four of us are going to connect to it no matter what.
Sure.
But the world will connect to it, because we're seeing something that could be historic.
I think dominance is interesting, because we don't get it very much. And What will be interesting is does he experience what most dominant teams experience, which is like backlash and negativity?
Oh, like the Patriots?
Yeah. Yes. Like now they had a lot of ingredients. Their coach was unlikable. Their quarterback was unlikable.
Owner.
They fringed or crossed the line when it came to rules and policies and procedures as it applied to the league. They had it all, man. And then they ran into the New York football
Giants. Yeah, I knew that was coming. I was just waiting for that to come.
Not once, but twice. Yes. Here's the thing about you saying he's going to win nine times. I went back and I was looking because he's on the cusp of having a five-win season. Five-win seasons by Hall of Fame members. Hogan did it seven times. Nicklaus did it seven times. Palmer did it four times. Tiger did it 10 times.
Wow.
Here are guys who never had one five-win season. Norman, Mickelson, Ells, Couples, Floyd, Stewart, Love, O'Meara, Kite, Crenshaw, Irwin, Faldo. It ain't easy to separate yourself, and there's more guys who can win now than, I think we would all agree, than ever, any week. If he wins nine times in two majors, does he pick up the lag by the end of the year that we're experiencing right now with TV?
I mean, without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Well, I mean, like Taylor was alluding to, if he's to win the PGA Championship, and we're going to go to the U.S. Open. Now, granted, it happened in 15 with Jordan Spieth winning the first two legs. It was the Masters and U.S. Open at that time. But if we go to the U.S. Open and Scottie Scheffler is looking for the third leg of a season major or season Grand Slam, yeah, there'll be traction. There will be people tuning in that wouldn't normally.
You agree with that?
I do agree with that.
Yeah,
yes.
You do too, don't you?
Yeah. And I totally, I would say that we need someone to be competitive with him on the back nine during these major championship opportunities. We need him not to win. I mean, and look, I'm with you. I love watching the guy, and I am so in awe of what he's doing. The thing that's most impressive is his mental focus and just how clear of a mind he seems to have. So, again, this is not a shot at him. But if we could get a Rory or a JT or a Ludwig, yeah, or a Spieth or somebody, if Johnson would if that Ludwig eagle putt goes in on 13 green right in front of you, can you imagine what those last few holes would have felt like?
It would have been totally different. Maybe somebody could put some pressure on him. And look at the way he finished RBC Heritage. There was no pressure put on Scottie Scheffler whatsoever. Now, granted, he kind of put the pressure away since he doubled the third hole on Thursday and didn't make another bogey until the 72nd hole. Like, that's what he does. He's just so dominant across the board. It's hard for somebody to play catch up with him.
The 15 thing is interesting to go back to Spieth in that year. Tiger was in a really wonky place. I remember, you know, the Chambers Bay image that I'll never forget was him hitting a shot from the side of the hill on the eighth hole at Chambers, and the club flew over his head, and he kind of lost his balance. But Phil was still very relevant. He had won the Open in 2013. Fox had gotten the U.S. Open package. That was new. That was interesting. And Spieth had an appeal. Because, to use a line from the remake of Wall Street, he was a monkey dancing on razor blades. I mean, like, every shot you're going, okay, this might go out of the ballpark.
He still is.
Absolutely he is. And he was making everything. And he was talking out loud. And you're going, this dude is petulant. He's interesting. He's dynamic. Scotty is the opposite of that. You're going, he's never going to hit a foul ball. There's a mundane quality to it. He doesn't really emote. He is chippy in a very stealth way. Like, the guy is dying lousy to literally choke you out. If he wins at Valhalla and we go to Pinehurst, do you think we'll feel the way that we felt about Spieth at St. Andrews?
I mean, no. You can't. I mean,
The answer is no.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, because Jordan Spieth he was the golden child coming up. He made the cut and had a great finish at the Byron Nelson, I believe, at 16
yes.
years old. And Scotty's just kind of flown under the radar his whole career, which is the way he wants it. No, I don't think that you can possibly feel that way. But if Scotty goes to Pinehurst and wins, and then we're going to Troon,
that would be a different story.
It'll be a completely different story.
Yeah.
And it's just fun that we're. you know, I don't think when Rahm won the Masters last year, we really had any thought of talking about the Grand Slam at that point.
No, and, but I think both of you guys earmarked him for two majors last year. I think we sat here and got wrapped up in the moment, which was understandable.
Yeah, but wait, you just ended the PGA Championship. You just moved us to Pinehurst.
He took us to Troon.
We have completely left Valhalla. We didn't even get there.
Did you not hear him take us to Troon?
Well, one thing, like what we really need to talk about is the fact that Scottie Scheffler is going to be a father at the PGA Championship.
Yes,
thank you.
His preparation leading in, we all here at this table knows what it feels like to have your first child. It is world rocking, and I don't know. I hope his preparation's okay. I hope he's able to do it because it would be a couple weeks, 3 weeks, maybe potentially off that he had leading into a major. And I don't know. I think that's going to be a tall hurdle to climb.
True story. I don't really identify with that. You'll appreciate this. My first child was born at 12:40 on a Sunday, October 4th of 1999. I was doing local radio in Charlotte at 6 a.m. the next morning talking about another Panther loss. Yeah. I just moved on, man.
No, that side of the table knows what it's like to compete on the PGA Tour. But I think that's a good point.
Yeah, no, it is. It's
about
true.
That. And I don't know, as we sit here right now, Scotty's told people he doesn't think he's going to play at the Wells Fargo Championship because of what Johnson just said is he needs to be home, and God bless him. Nobody would fault him for staying home and helping Meredith get this baby happy and healthy and sleeping properly. But if that's the case, Brendan, that means no start between Harbortown and PGA Championship. That's a three-week break off when he was flying, you know, for over a month.
The form he was in, the last thing he really wanted is a three-week break, right? You're playing that good. You want to just keep going. I understand that there's obviously some circumstances here. But, yeah, I agree with 100% with you there. That will be 3 weeks off. Who knows? You go off for 3 weeks. This game is very, very fickle. You come back and something's just a little bit different.
Gary's already FedExed him his, do you like the sponsorship there, of the Wanamaker to Dallas. But I think this is a big point, and form is fickle. He's never won outside the months of February, March, or April.
So now we're doing this.
Yes, like, we are.
We are.
That's going to be
broken.
We did
this with
year.
Justin well, Thomas.
I agree. I do think he's going to win again this year. I don't think that we're going to sit here next year and say the same thing. But again, it's when you haven't played for 3 or 4 weeks. The one part of his game that struggles the most is his putting, which requires obviously the most touch. And I do wonder what that's like at Valhalla.
Okay, so if I said to you, whatever the preparation is, do you feel stronger or more bullish about him at Valhalla than you did about Rahm at Oak Hill last year? Because all you guys liked his chances, liked him pretty good.
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do, because of the way he's playing golf.
How about you?
Yeah, his consistency, even if he has 3 weeks off, and we said it about him at the Masters, like he's the only person in the field that doesn't have to be completely sharp to win this golf tournament.
Right.
So if anybody's prepared to do it, it's him. And I think he'll find the time, even with a baby, if he's home, to go out and grind and hit balls for a couple hours a day. It's just the tournament reps that concern me and the finer details that you lose over 3 weeks off. But yes, without a doubt, I feel stronger about him than Rahm.
How about you?
I would agree with that. Okay. I would be surprised, having said all of that about Scotty and the potential rust, I'd be surprised if he didn't finish sick. I mean, if he finished worse than fifth, I think we'd be surprised. And that's crazy to say, but that's how consistent his game's been the last couple of years.
The other thing about consistency is the consistency of his mind. It's uncluttered. And the identification that he has of who he is, he has a job. And the job is to play golf professionally. And he's better than anybody at his job. And then when he leaves, like, he's not struggling with, should I participate in this thing or social media, or I got a beef with this guy. There is a levelness to him that I think allows him to get into this space, which is hitting balls out of the center of the face more consistently than anybody. The other thing about him that I think is interesting is we try to identify, what does he do to his competition? He's not Tiger. Nobody can physically intimidate people. I think the aura of Tiger, the environment of Tiger, was debilitating to other players. It was reflective in the scoring averages of players who played with him and then got away from him. I think what Scotty does is his insistence on not retreating puts guys in a place of taking things on because they realize he's not going away. And I think Morikawa and Oberg, and I know it was a new experience for him. Homa, was it adrenaline on 12? I don't know. It's like clockwork, Johnson, what happens to these guys when they get to the inward nine on a Sunday and you're going, he's not going to make a mistake. I think they're taking things. I think that's a suffocating quality. I think that's his most powerful dynamic that he possesses.
It 100% is. It's a great point. And I don't think Ludwig was going for the flag on 11. I think he just pulled it. Morikawa, I think, was going at that flag. And I putting them in a position. Homa, a bit unlucky with the gust or adrenaline, whatever it may be. Morikawa, I mean, Homa's interesting because on 13 at Augusta, he decided to lay up off that tee every day. Never once went for the green in two. And I thought that he would have stepped up after making that double on 12 and been like, okay, I've got to take this chance. He, in a way, I like it and I don't like it. I think he proved that he can be there for the long haul in major championships, but not taking on the risk when you really needed it was a bit concerning.
I think there's a level of intimidation that Scotty brings by the fact that you know he's not going to make a mistake.
No doubt.
I think you're watching this guy. You can't help but feel a little bit intimidated, and it takes you out of your game, as you say. You start taking on flags that you wouldn't necessarily. Like, you're playing against a guy that's playing essentially a perfect game of golf.
How about your boy Nance, the Sunday of Heritage? Come on the air at 3. There's four players within a shot. 15 minutes later, there's nobody within 3.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Well, the chip in. It was ball game. Good night. You know, the Eagle chip in that he had at Harbortown. And even through a weather delay and into a next day, you knew what was going to happen after that. But, yeah, I think that all of us can relate to that. You don't have to be a professional player. You could be at your local club. And if you know your opponent is going to net birdie every hole,
I knew we were going to get to this.
You're going to take chances that you wouldn't otherwise have to take.
This is the Will Calder segment of the program.
I didn't say that. You did. Those were your words. But it's
probably passively aggressive. Just go ahead and say it. The guy's a criminal.
Especially if you're missing one of your clubs in your bag. But, it's a good point. And I think that you do. You start doing things that you aren't comfortable doing if you know your opponent isn't going to make a mistake. And that's the part of his game that I'm most fascinated by, is that his mind never seems to be cluttered. And he is so at peace with the shot that he's about to play. I can't relate to that. I don't think almost anybody can relate to that.
It's I tell you, that the moment at Harbortown, which again, I think some of this stuff is underrated. I think you talked about this. The efficiency with which he hits shots from around the green when he does miss a green, which you're going to miss 20 some odd greens in major championships. The beginning of the final round of the Masters, I think he's pretty honest. Like, he's not trying to protect his own mind about hitting bad shots and saying that he didn't. On one, on that final day, he said, I made good contact, and it was short of the green. And it was that back left pin, and he hits it up there 4 feet, and he makes it. The second hole, he's over the green to that, and now he's chipping back to that front right pin, which they made a little alteration to the front of that green, and then the bunker shot on 3. Like, those things are so damn good under the heat of major championships. I think that we undersell how valuable that is to his arsenal.
Which speaks to the fact that he's number one in bogey avoidance on the PGA Tour. He just doesn't make them. It's because of his short game, because he misses plenty of greens. Yes, he's number one in strokes gained approach too, but he misses plenty of greens, like you said, and he just gets it up and down. I go back to the Players' Championship on 14, tight play, best tournament of the year, in my opinion, by the way. And he has this pretty basic, but under the circumstances, difficult chip. He chips it to 3 inches, and he does that all the time. 18 at Augusta. Granted, he had a 4-shot lead. Fairway bunker, leaves it short right, chips it up the hill, lands it perfectly. I mean, your body has to be feeling something different, yet he controls his emotions enough to chip it tight again and again.
I think we undersell it because for the longest time he was missing enough 4 or 5 footers where we weren't realizing just how good this guy's short game is. Mm. Now that he's making all of those putts, we're like, man, this guy can chip the ball.
He can.
Can I ask you, one thing that he's getting some pushback on is that he doesn't show any emotion when he's hitting all of these shots. That doesn't bother me at all. But I do wonder, when you're in those competitive moments, if you feel it necessary to thank somebody or get fiery, get emotional, play with some passion. Johnson, you certainly played with a ton of that, still play with a ton of that. But I'm wondering, like, what is your thought on the fact that he doesn't show any emotion? And would you feel obligated to show some emotion?
I don't think obligated is the right word. I think he needs to do what's best for him or what's true to you. It's like if John Rahm tried to bottle everything up in him, he's going to explode. I think if Scotty's going around fist pumping and showing all this outward emotion, that's not his true character. I think it would kind of be off-putting for him.
And right. I'm going to push back on that a little bit. 13 on Saturday at Augusta, he made that eagle putt up the hill. He went crazy for him.
So did you, by the way.
Oh, was awesome. I mean, big really? Fist pump, and he was walking up to the crowd and wave. Like, I've never seen it like that. It was really neat. And I'll go back to some negative emotion at the BMW last year on Sunday. Had a chance to win, kept missing putt after putt, and he starts kicking his putter off the green.
He does show. I guess what I'm asking is do you have any issue with some of the people that are saying that he should show some emotion or show more emotion as he's playing the right shot? I don't have any problem with it, but I'm hearing that. I'm sure you are too. You know, you do.
You do. I think I'm not going to ask anybody to pay closer attention. I think he does it in a very understated way. Like the par putt he made on 15 at Harbortown before the suspension. Are you kidding me? Three fist pumps on a par putt. You got a cushion. I go back to when he rinsed it in Houston on that little short par three on Saturday. I heard what he said that was not for air, and he made that look to Ted Scott like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, really? Yeah. What is this hole? I think if you want to hone in on him, he does make some gestures that speak to, but he can't be who he's not.
Right. And that's a good answer. I'm okay. To make it clear, I'm okay with what he is. And I think that sometimes we miss some of the things that he does. Like at Riviera, the par five, number 11, he missed a 4-footer and threw his golf ball into the woods. You know, nobody mentions that, that he shows that emotion when he does that. I like when he does those sort of things. But you did hear a ton of fans say, well, he didn't, you know, when he almost made it on 9 or almost made it on 14 at Augusta, you didn't see almost any reaction. He just puts his head down and keeps walking. I marvel at his ability to do that, but also have no problem with the fact that he didn't go crazy.
So I know that you want him to belt out "Don't Stop Believin'" like some others do.
Wow.
So let's get to him right now.
How about Rory with those high notes?
And Shane just sitting out, just being consistent with his contribution over the course of the weekend. Very little. God love it. He knows it, by the way. He knows it, that Rory carried them. Let's get to him. This is always going to be interesting. But here, in a million years, with all of us leaving Valhalla in 2014 in whatever capacity it was, you're going, you know, when we come back here in 2024, he will have not won a major between then and now. In extraordinary circumstance, let me start with you. Give me just a general kind of viewpoint of where you are with him going back there under these circumstances.
I think the fact that he's coming here to Charlotte before he's going there certainly is good for his mojo. I've talked to him at length about this. It's his favorite PGA Tour course, Quail Hollow is. He's won here 3 times, so I think that's going to help his confidence. I would have to ask, in order to answer your question, Gary, I would have to ask him where he is with his approach play and how comfortable and committed he is to this little swing change that he's trying to make. When he's under the gun, is he able to make that same motion that he's been working on with Butch Harmon? So I have some questions, I guess, before I would pick him to win the PGA Championship about going through a little bit of a swing change. And also, how clear is his mind? 10 years ago, we did an interview on the radio broadcast after the PGA Championship, and he said to me, golf is the most important thing in my life at the minute. I'm not asking it to be the most important thing when you have a family 10 years later, but I do wonder, you know, how his mind is working in those moments, maybe in relation to when he was winning those major championships.
Yeah, and it looked like last week in New Orleans, to speak of the swing, he was I think the problem had been early in the year he was missing the irons to the left, and it looked like he was hanging a lot out to the right last week when he, or whenever New Orleans was. He was hanging them out to the right, which I see as a good sign. It's allowing him to be able to swing freely and release the club in a way that he's not worried about it going left. If we go back to Valhalla, I think he's going to have a lot of comfortable feelings as he walks around that golf course. But let's look at what he did when he returned to Hoylake last year, where he won a major championship. Finished T6th, well back of Brian Harman.
Yep.
PGA Championship at Kiawah Island, where he won the PGA in 12. T49 in 2021. Yep. So I think going back thinking that, oh, Rory's last major win, he's going to be so comfortable around this track. Well, it hadn't necessarily proved to be the same at other venues he's returned to. So I think the fact that 10 years later, what you're saying, Taylor, that he's such a different person, I think matters the most.
I think winning that team event is going to open his eyes to the enjoyment of golf again. He's looked pissed off on the golf course for a while. I think the fact that he went out there, had fun with his buddy, and they ended up winning this event is going to go a long, long way for him.
Mm. You think pissed is the way you would describe kind of the way he's been on the golf course?
Yeah.
You do.
Frustrated.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've seen some moments in the last couple of months for sure.
Yeah. Let me sprinkle the infield with some data to support what you were saying about returning to places. First of all, this is an extraordinarily special resume. He has 60 major championship starts in his career. Half of them, he's finished in the top 10. He has 17 top fives. He has 3 seconds and 4 thirds. He is a sashay through the front doors of the World Golf Hall of Fame whenever that day arrives. But he is a historical anomaly because of where he finds himself. And when he does win that fifth major, which I unequivocally believe that he will, and it could be in Louisville, because of the gap between 4 and 5, the gaps between 5 and those who have then won 6, guys like Faldo and Phil and Trevino, there have been wide gaps. But 4 and 5, he finds himself in an unusual place. Here's the other thing about the PGA specifically. Not only has he not won that event nor any other major, he hadn't finished in the top 5 in the PGA since he won it. That's, I can't compute that. Here are his results in the majors, in the PGA specifically, since he won it. 17th in 2015 at Whistling Straits, missed the cut at Baltusrol, tied 22nd at Quail Hollow, his happy haunt, in 17 in the month of August. Tied for 50th in 2018 at Belrive, tied for 8th at Bethpage, T33 in 2020 Harding Park, T49 at Kiawah, as you just pointed out, tied for 8th at Southern Hills, and 7th last year. Not a top
Sounds
5.
Sounds like a pretty good career.
No, it is.
He's trending.
But he's measured differently. That doesn't compute, does it?
No.
Top fives.
It is bizarre, given all the success you talked about. I mean, and the number that's most interesting to me is half of his major championship starts top 10.
Crazy.
My goodness. That's crazy talk right there. When one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to do professionally was walk between Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson, and Rory McIlroy, between their groups. Rory was playing with Bernd Wiesberger in the final group at Valhalla, and Ricky and Phil were in front of him, and just the noise on that place was just awesome to be part of in the middle of all of that. And to what Brendan was saying about the way that Rory carried himself
Absolutely.
Around that golf course, on the broadcast, David Faraday on CBS called him a baby-faced killer, and he looked like it. He did.
Yep.
He didn't care if he was making Phil Mickelson mad when he was playing into him. And he was, by the way, he waited on every shot that day. And as soon as they put the flag in, he didn't care if people were moving behind him on the green. He was ready to go. He wanted to finish his round before dark, and he wanted so badly to win this tournament. There was a carefree, joy, focus that he carried himself with on the course that I think that he's still searching for, and clearly he's been searching for it for a long time in the PGA Championship.
I'm with you totally about where he was. And I think psychoanalysis is fun as long as we're not saying we're absolutely right about what we're thinking they think or the way that they are. I think he was a bully then. I think he
bullied Phil Mickelson on the 18th. Yeah, right, you know what? Did. I'm going to hit over you. And Phil's like, no, no, no. And Rory's like, I don't care. I'm hitting over you.
You damn right he was.
You have no other choice.
Yep. I don't know if you were standing there last year at Oak Hill. My question to him before that PGA was, do you go back and watch events that you've won? And he said, I do. I said, well, have you watched Valhalla again? Because I felt like you were ruthless. Can you still be ruthless? And his answer was, yeah, I can, but I don't think it's worth the energy. And I'm paraphrasing his answer at Oak Hill. I think he's ruthless in the Ryder Cup. And maybe it's the impetus comes from, you know, investing in other people. And I think that he needs that again. Like, I'm not suggesting he should put on lavender again like he had on that Sunday at Valhalla and put on a flat-brilled cap, close to what you're rocking. He had on a flat-billed cap. And he's like, get the hell off this property. I'm on a heater. I won the Open. I won that World Golf Championship. I'm taking this damn thing. I think he needs not to be completely just unforgiving. He needs some of that, man.
I think playing those first two rounds with Scotty at Augusta is going to give him a little bit of that. I think that's going to light a fire under his ass. I really do. I mean, he's played with Scotty Scheffler, watched him for those two rounds. Like, man, I need to do something. I need to make some changes.
You think there's something instructional about him being with? I'm with you about him being with him. That there's an effect on him. Do you think it was a positive effect?
Maybe it was positive. Maybe it was more, oh my gosh, the gap between me and him is even bigger than I thought. But at the same time, to your point, what he said at Oak Hill, it takes a ton out of you to put yourself there. I can't imagine in a major, but in a regular event, it is draining to be in contention the whole time and to be that killer mentality. And for him to say it takes too much energy to put himself there, that is concerning to me, because that's what Scotty has. Scotty's got a plethora of energy, and maybe hopefully this first kid doesn't take it from him.
I do want to ask you about one intangible, because we have not had a consistent amount of Tiger Woods for well over a decade, as you pointed out. And he always, when he's on the property, will carry the most energy, the most support, etc. But given that he's not always on the property for 4 days, he's not always in contention for 4 days, and we don't get him but a few times a year, that opened the door for Phil Mickelson to take most of that energy around the property consistently throughout the course of the season until he left the PGA Tour 2.5-3 years ago. And that energy has been given to Rory McIlroy.
100%.
And you just witnessed it in New Orleans. Yep. I mean, it was like going to a home SEC football game. And you're supporting one team, one player, and the rest are the visitors.
And he and I have been going to that tournament since 2007, playing and competing. It was so different than anything I had ever seen there. Even driving up, you know, where parking is on La Palco or whatever the road is, it was a zoo. And it's all because of one guy. That's what he brings.
Don't you think that he'll have that at Louisville? He'll have it here.
The only time he doesn't have it is probably in a U.S. Ryder Cup situation. That's right. The only time he doesn't have the home field advantage.
I also don't think, and this speaks to kind of the totality of how great Augusta National is. Tiger got in 19. That was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience. There's a totality of support that everybody gets at the Masters. Now, look, if he's there late on a Sunday in 25 or any year going forward, I think you would have that feeling of them trying to pull him across the line. He's going to get it in Louisville. He's going to get the partisanship that maybe you would think would be reserved for someone like Justin Thomas. There's an affection for him and almost an empathy for where, in a weird way, like the guy couldn't have, you know, at least from the outside, a more charmed existence. But he desperately wants to do this again. And he's going back to the place he hadn't done it since he was last there. It's going to be lathered up if he gets himself in that place. One last thing about New Orleans and observing it from afar, you're right. The fact that you're talking about traffic jams at that place is unbelievable to me, because it's the sleepiest thing ever, because people are going, wait, I might go out there. What time is it? It's 11. I need another hour of sleep.
Yeah, we got tickets to Jazz Fest.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. My sense is I think he will benefit from the fact that he had to carry somebody else. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Shane. He said to himself, look, this guy carried me. There was an extra ingredient of him not being the scratchy player. He was not only the dominant force in terms of the environment, He knew that the other guy didn't have his best stuff. And it's like, hey, man, I'm the guy. And he got a level of affection from them that maybe it's a renewal of, you know what? I am that guy. And it's not so much about ego, but belief that I am the man who pulls the sled when it comes to the interest level in this sport right now. And the way that he made putts that he needed to make.
16.
Bingo. I think that you can value the win all you want. It doesn't matter. I think the intangible things that he experienced could be beneficial.
I agree with what Brendan said. Yeah, I think that there's no question there's some positives to take away from the reasons you just referenced.
All right, let's talk about the venue before we get to some other things, because I think this is a swan song for Valhalla. It just, I mean, if you look at, I mean, you tell me when they're going back there.
I don't know.
It's not planned to go back, but the PGA doesn't set like the USGA has.
No, and they've actually changed the language in their bylaws in terms of how far out in front. And that was a Seth Waugh initiative that this is, and he said it to me specifically, and he said it on this show, that I think as a group, USGA, Open Championship, RNA, and the PGA of America, that we've been irresponsible with earmarking sites so far out.
I would agree with that.
I couldn't agree more with that. So we know where 31 is, and that's Kiowa. And I do want to get your overall thoughts about this event in terms of where it's been, where it's going. For the foreseeable future, they're not going back there. They now have Frisco online for an anchor site like Pinehurst is. Frisco's their anchor site for this championship. But in the time that they've gone to Valhalla, starting in 1996, with the financial interest in that property, the PGA of America, 2000, 2014, and in between a Ryder Cup in 2008, give me an overall thought about Valhalla and their history in big-time events.
I mean, there's been exciting finishes every time they've been there. It was a great Ryder Cup in 2008. I for one, like the golf course. I know you guys might not agree with me. I really do like the golf course.
Okay.
I think it's right in front of you. No tricks to it. And again, I think it's a recipe for exciting finishes. You've got a great par five finishing hole. I think it's a perfect risk reward hole. I got no problem with the golf course.
Brooks and Perry was a playoff, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So was Tiger and Bob May.
Yeah.
The Ryder Cup was the first U.S. win since, I guess, what was it?
99.
If you go through a 7 Ryder Cup stretch, it was the only American win.
Exactly. And it was
without Tiger.
Without Tiger. And then the 14, I know Roy didn't win in a playoff, but it was an incredible watch, right. And he dominated with his iron play. So I've never played the golf course personally or competed there, but it has delivered incredible tournaments. And it would be sad to lose a place like that delivers every single time.
I have competed there.
Have you?
Yes, indeed. Charlie Reimer and I played Kenny Perry and Ted Bishop, the former president of the PGA of America, in a match before the 14.
How'd you do?
We beat him 1-up. And Ted Bishop stumbled off the property believing that Charlie Reimer was a better player than Kenny Perry. Charlie played out of his mind. Anyway, I digress.
Can we get to your thoughts on this? Because you have an appreciation for architecture, and you are my go-to whenever I want to ask, okay, I need to check this golf course off my list. And I'll freely admit, look, if we were taking a buddy's trip, maybe we wouldn't pick Valhalla as a spot to go to. But to Brendan's point, who cares? All that should matter is that they're coming to the golf course in droves in Louisville, and we get incredible drama every single time. So do you have a problem with Valhalla as a PGA Championship site?
No, I don't have it at all as a site. These sites for these events, first of all, we are too inside of all of this. Most people who consume this, which is a television show, they don't care about architecture. They don't particularly know about it. They don't have any reason to know about it. They want to know who's in the mix and is this going to be interesting? And Torrey Pines kind of has a similar as you, again, not, but guess what it's produced?
I know.
I'm not a Torrey fan either, but it's at the end of the day, does it deliver? Does it give you an environment that you feel is palpable as you're watching it in 96, 2000, 2008, 2014? It has, you guys will, I love this exercise. It's not just who won. Who was in the mix? I'm going to go back to 1996. Here's your top 10. Perry and Brooks in the playoff. Tommy as the Bell Tolls. Finishing in top four. Yeah, how about that? So Ernie Els finished.
That's right.
Yes, yes. So Ernie Els finished tied for third. Let's see. I can't even read my own handwriting. Jesper Parnevik finished in a tie for fifth. VJ, fifth. Phil tied for eighth. Frank Nabilo, top 10, tied for eighth. Jesper Parnevik, I just mentioned that. He tied for eighth, or tied for fifth, pardon me. Okay, 2000, it was May and Tiger. It was their show. Thomas Bjorn, third. Appleby, fourth. Now here's where it gets kind of wonky. Greg Chalmers with a tie for fourth. Jose Mariola Thabel tied for fourth. Franklin Langham tied for
Georgia
seventh.
Bulldog.
Exactly right. Nota Begay, eighth alone. How about Nota jumping up? And then here are the guys who tied for ninth. Darren Clark, Scott Dunlap, who was part of the, he was in the mix the whole week. Fred Funk, DL3, Phil, another top 10 at Valhalla. Tom Watson at 50, tied for ninth. Jack, by the way, here's the thing about 2000, before I get to 14. 2000 had it all. I mean, it has a guy in Bob May who was making monkeys fly. I mean, it was, and you're going, don't care who he is. He is, I mean, this is Rocco before Rocco. And Bob May was a legend in the junior golf space in Southern California. Like Tiger, it wasn't like he was familiar with this guy.
Yeah.
This guy was a total stud. Jack and Tiger paired together in the first two rounds. Jack at 60 needed to eagle the 18th on day two, and he missed holing out a short wedge by about 10 inches. And he made that gesture to Tiger on the 18th green. So here's what Valhalla has. It has images, and it has May and Tiger. It has this. It'll always have that. It has Tiger in the playoff before that ball disappeared doing that. Like, how do you get around that? I mean, Valhalla's got moments.
It's got Anthony Kim not realizing that he had beat Sergio Garcia so badly that the match was over. He was going to the next tee. I mean, it has Hunter Mahan with the bomb to basically give the United States the victory. I'm with you. You shouldn't plan out more than a handful of years, and I agree with Seth Wall on that, but I don't know why you would stop going to Valhalla. I mean,
you'd still go there.
It works every time.
Okay.
Every time. So why wouldn't you go to some place that works? And I'm with Johnson on Torrey Pines. I don't want to play the golf course. But if they want to keep going back there because it gets drama every time, I get it. It's in Southern California. It's in San Diego. I get it. So we shouldn't be thinking about necessarily the courses that all of us would love to play to check off of our bucket list. We should be thinking about what is going to attract the biggest audience and create the most thrilling finish.
Well, we just go back to LACC US Open last year, which I think all of us can say we were very excited about it.
Yes.
And it, for lack of a better word, it was a dud of a major championship. I mean, Rory made a run, Wyndham Clark breakout, sure. But the whole week was a bit of a letdown.
Great golf courses don't necessarily make great venues. I love LACC. It's one of the finest golf courses in the world. But when you have choke points on your property and you have a membership that had real kind of hesitation about doing this to the point that they're trying to gobble up as many tickets to make it a private party, that's not a good starting point. It's not good in the social media era to have people going, wait a second, they don't even want people there. That becomes an undercurrent. And 5, 6, and 7 was a dead end. You couldn't even get to that part. Here's the thing about Valhalla. It's built to entertain. Not only, you know, these holes that you're playing, but it's you got to build a city. When you walk into Valhalla for this thing, like I have on several occasions, you're like, when are we getting to the golf course? Because I've gone to a merchandise tent that's like 300,000 square feet. I've already passed that. Here's 4 hospitality venues. You're building a city.
You are. I know you're thrilled to be there for 48 hours.
Yes. My schedule has worked out beautifully. In and out, baby. Like some guys who don't make a lot of cuts. Get there late or leave early. Here's the last thing about Valhalla, going back to 14. A couple other guys who are in the mix. Phil again. So that's three. They've been there three times. And being there for the Ryder Cup.
Sounds like I know who his long shot is.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I play that card? By the way, at the Ryder Cup, even though he was tethered to Anthony Kim, who was carrying him around in all those matches together, Phil always knew who to latch himself onto, like young talent with a lot of energy. He's had good moments there. He's had very good moments there. Last thing about venues. Here's the future and here's the past for the PGA Championship, because we all want to rank stuff. It's fourth, right? It's fourth in the grand scheme of things. I don't care. It's all equal to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's if you're asking.
The perception.
The perception certainly is that it's fourth. I wouldn't necessarily say that I enjoy it the fourth most. I think that it almost always gives us some drama. If I'm thinking back in the last couple of years and major championship drama, to Johnson's point, gosh, we desperately need some of that. As much as I love the Masters, it's my favorite sporting event, it's my favorite thing, you know, about anything that I get to do professionally. We haven't had drama since 2019 at the Masters. We desperately need some more drama at the Masters. The U.S. Open, we have not had as much drama in recent years. The Open Championship, I love Brian Harman. I would like to go turkey hunting with him. I'd love to hang out with him in Sea Island. He's an unbelievable human. He blew the field away last year. Colin Morikawa didn't give us a whole lot of drama when he won in England a couple years ago. Cam Smith, we got at the Old Course, certainly. But the one place that we almost always get drama is the PGA Championship. So no matter how it's labeled or how it's perceived, I think it's critical to golf's calendar.
I think it's interesting that the U.S. Open, I'm not going to say they've had an identity crisis. I think that they have had challenges holding up to this kind of who they are thing, which is there any of the other three majors that we go score, we're sensitive to what the total is? No, we're not. Nobody ever talks about what they shoot at the Open.
Yeah.
Nobody cares what they shoot at Augusta National, and they certainly don't care what the total is at the PGA. The USGA has a funny challenge. Like, people were wigging out when Ricky and Schauffele did what they did within 20 minutes of each other last year at LA Country Club. Like, yeah, they did. I mean, it was the marine layer, and it was soft, and the conditions were right for these guys to go insane. But the PGA and Kerry Haig and his staff, it's not that they don't care. They have a model. They have a plan. And they seem to, on a consistency level, execute that damn plan pretty darn well, don't they?
I mean, I was just about to say, Kerry Haig, the setup is they rarely, if ever, since he's been in charge, they've never missed.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the USGA, you're talking about it, Shinnecock. They've missed it a couple times.
Yes.
With hole locations. And I think, as far as the USGA goes, I think they've listened to the complaining of players a little too much because they have lost their identity. Even par should have had a chance to win every U.S. Open, maybe five under. And now they are going the other direction. They're going too far, and they've completely lost it. But the PGA hits it out of the park.
Well, I think the name Kerry Haig, you're exactly right. He doesn't miss. He takes the players' opinions. He will walk around the golf course. He'll listen to what guys are saying. He'll listen quietly what guys are saying to their caddies. And he's spot on and has been spot on every year.
The USGA has had, not only, like you said, with Shinnecock, those moments, 2004, and obviously, again, they had another situation specifically on the 15th hole in 2018 as well. And then they have these other dubious moments. And also choices you make. The Chambers Bay decision. Not a bad decision, but you went out there. I went out there 2 weeks before, and I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, there's no grass on these greens. And so they made themselves vulnerable for criticism. And players were right there to start criticizing.
But Johnson made a good point about what they've done in recent years to correct all of that. I mean, John Bodenhammer setting up the golf course has done a good job in the last 5 years. And their leadership, in my opinion, has gotten significantly better. But yeah, no, they made a comedy of errors for over a decade. And I do think they've gotten past all of that. As great as the PGA Championship has been, the U.S. Open's been close. In terms of drama, they've given us most years, maybe not necessarily last year, but most years they've given us that drama in the last handful of years.
Yeah, they
drama last year.
Yeah, there was some. I think that what you were saying about the golf course and you know the how quirky the scoring was, and I think there were times where you wondered necessarily if it was going to deliver, and it did. It delivered. The 2 years prior to that, unbelievable. You know, the finish at Torrey, what Rahm did to win, and then the following year, Brookline was incredible.
It was just great.
Remarkable finish.
Yeah, and we'll do the U.S. Open preview. We're all excited about Pinehurst.
I haven't decided yet.
Yeah, you have not. Okay. Well, that's right. We gotta work with your people.
That's right.
And work on the language of that deal.
I've got his agent's number if you need it.
I'm sure you do. Last 10 years for the PGA, Valhalla, Whistling Straits, Baldstraw, Quail, Belle Reve, Bethpage, Harding Park, Kiowa, Southern Hills, which was a substitute, late entry. Yeah. It was supposed to be at a Trump property in Jersey and then Oak Hill. The thing about all those places, like Oak Hill in 13, when I went there to do a thing with Kerry Higgins, I'm like, ugh. But Andrew Green went in there and turned that place into a dynamic place. Good for their membership. What a joy for them to enjoy going forward. Southern Hills and what Gil did there. Kiowa, which has just been announced, will be 23. I mean, was Kiowa not a home run?
Home run.
And now we look ahead. So Quail next year, and you guys are both members. I know, obviously, it's a great source of pride. How about Quail in May for a PGA? The other PGA was in August, and it's the same agronomic setup as Wells, right?
It's going to be the crowning achievement for the club. I mean, you look back, the President's Cup, we had the fortune of having really good weather come in. It got cool and kind of browned and firmed the place up come the weekend. The PGA in 17, I thought it was disgusting. It was hot, soft, rainy. The Bermuda rough just doesn't look as good.
Hot and soft is the worst combination.
Like Charlotte in August, it's not a place you want to be. May, I mean, the golf course right now leading into the Wells Fargo, it could host a major championship tomorrow. So I think fast forward a year, we've got such a great staff with Keith Wood. It's going to be amazing. Yeah,
I've never seen the golf course better. If there's one thing, our greens are 9 months old.
Yeah. You
know? So, and listen, they redid the greens last year. So it's going to take a little while for them to mature and hold shots. A year from now, they're going to be unbelievable. You know, so yeah, no, I think that it's going to pop in May. The most successful PGA championship financially, 2017 PGA championship at Quail Hollow, that'll be passed by in 2025.
Well, and the President's Cup was, I know Royal Montreal is going to blow it out. Presidents, look, Charlotte loves the big event, and they're not exactly celebrating a lot of great achievement from their local teams right now. So they will absolutely hold on tight. So beyond Quail, Aronimink in 2026, thoughts?
I like it.
You do?
Yep. We played at
Tiger's event a couple times, maybe 11, 12.
Somewhere around there. They had a BMW there, and Keegan won it, and it was they had a 10, deluge 11. Of rain, and it was super soft, and they totally undressed the place. That won't be the case then. Gil's tuned that place up.
Firm, it'll be good. It'll be very, very good.
You like Aronimink.
Love it. We played there. I think it was 10-11. It was around the Congressional U.S. Open time that Rory won. We played it for 2 years for Tiger's event.
Yep.
Awesome. Philly will show out. And it's far enough south, you don't have to worry too much about the May date. I think when you looked at Oak Hill last year, they were lucky with weather. Saturday was rainy, but the weather was really lucky. And the membership wasn't allowed to set foot on that property from October until May. So that's a travesty to ask. I know they had a second course, but when we walked across the other course to get to the TV compound, it did
Let
not.
Let me play that.
Well, it looked good, but it also looked like midwinter. I think the way they injected life into that golf course was not something they'd want to do very often.
So this gets to a grander point as we go from Aronimink, Frisco. You've been to Frisco. Have you guys been there yet?
No.
What your thoughts on Frisco?
It's unbelievable. They built a new city.
It's Disneyland.
It's crazy. Like it was farmland 5 years ago, and now all of a sudden, all of these people in Dallas are moving to this area where they're getting much more bang for their buck, obviously. But they've built all these subdivisions and all this retail around these properties, and I think that, as you guys have seen at the Dallas tournament, no matter where it's been, but especially at Craig Ranch, they've created a party-like environment there.
Totally.
And I think that they'll do the same thing for the PGA Championship. I'll be interested to hear what people have to say about the course, but again, I don't think that that should be the first thing that matters. I think it should be, what kind of championship is it going to be? What kind of atmosphere are we going to have?
A very subliminal shot at Gil Hance.
I'm a huge fan of Gil Hance. I think he's incredible. I think his original work is fantastic as well. A lot of the complaints are he's great at renovating courses, and his originals leave a little bit to be desired. I am on the other side of that fence, but I understand exactly what you're saying.
I think that reputation might have been mildly earned 5-6 years ago, but from Ohoopee to Caprock Ranch and some of these other places that he has done new construction on that are coming online, like Kinsale down in Naples, High Grove, which is going to be in the central part of the state of Florida. I can go on and on. But it is kind of interesting that Gil's name came up, because it will be the Gil Hance Invitational to some degree. Aronimink, he did the restoration on Frisco, the East Course. He did the original design. Olympic just completed it. I was out there last summer. I loved what it looked like. Baldestraw, the lower course, he did that as well. That's four in a row.
Plus Southern Hills
as well. Congressional, that's Andrew Green and what he did in 30. And then, of course, back to Kiowa in 31. Here's the other part of this. You look at all that. When they made the move to May, you're going, oh, my God, they're jumping off point as Bethpage. It could be frigid. I thought it was great. Cool, like, really, are you complaining about cool temperatures compared to what we've been subjected to in August at some of these sites? May has been a home run to me. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think that you have a bigger audience. Well, no, you have a bigger audience in May, and now you keep the momentum of not necessarily a major championship, but what feels like a major championship from March all the way through the playoffs. I would, though, Brendan, like to see them go to some new areas of the country, though, that they haven't been able to go
like
to
where?
Before.
Like where? Okay, I've had that down.
Yeah, like the Northwest, maybe, or go to,
Sahali?
Yeah.
In May.
I think that would be great. I think that also another thing to think about would be even Florida. Like, as crazy as that may sound for the PGA Championship, it's happening in May, you know, and it's not happening in August anymore.
Right.
And that's a golf crazy state.
And it's a golf crazy development state right now. And since we know we're not going to have one anywhere other than the places I just mentioned before 31, I think Florida's in play. I do. Now, they've done it before, and it was in August, and it was dreadful. PGA National was, I mean, the greens were yellow. They looked like it was not good. If, let's say, Florida's in play. You got any place in mind?
I was just about to ask you that. I think it probably would be a place that isn't built yet, because a lot of the great courses down there wouldn't host or wouldn't be able to. Can Stream Song host a PGA Championship?
Hotels within 30 miles right now in 10 years, maybe. I was just there a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know. First of all, the alligator population there, I'm not joking. I get it. They're very prevalent in New Orleans, where you were just, it's a little unnerving. And I'm not trying to be, you know, squeamish about stuff.
You put 45,000 people out there, chances are one of them may get a leg chewed off.
Seriously. And there's a lot.
That's a problem.
I don't think Stream Song is probably an option. I was thinking South Florida. Is there anywhere that you can think of?
I would love to see us go back to Miami. I mean, somewhere on the calendar. We haven't been there since Doral went away.
Yeah.
You know, and now South Florida's tournament is in Palm Beach at PGA National. It'd be great to go to the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area, but I did say that without having a course in mind. I will admit that.
These two have played Panther National.
Negative.
Adam Scott just posted some video from there.
Yeah,
looked really enjoyable.
Yeah, if you like losing balls and shooting 85.
Not on your list?
No, very, very low. I'm up to Johnson's point. I think if something's in Florida, it's going to be something that gets built down the line. I don't see anywhere now wanting to host a PGA out there.
I think the May date, it satisfies the anchor site of Frisco. It opens up the state of Texas, which was just out of play. You could say, obviously, because it was all, you're not going anywhere in the state of Texas in the month of August. And one other last point about the whole Frisco thing. I'm not saying it is the future of major championship golf everywhere, because the open rota will be what it is. It is a sign, though, of what is out there, and that is the enormity of these complexes, with the idea of the infrastructure required to do this stuff. The size of Frisco is so ridiculously big. They have 13 restaurants in this area around a mat, like the world's largest putting green, and they've got a performance center, and they've got a short course, and they've got Bo Welling's West Course. It's a city, man.
It people have moved from all over the world to work in that in this yes. entire area too. Been out there a couple of times. And I don't have a problem with the golf course. I do wonder how it would be received because it's new and it's sure. not something that people have gone to play.
Well, they're beta testing it with a lot of other PGA championships.
CPC's going on.
Right now. Yeah,
as
it's
we're
going
doing
on
this,
now.
Yeah.
They had the senior PGA there last year. They've got the KPMG Women's PGA for all their practices and procedures to get everything in place.
Overall, I'm a huge fan of them doing it because sure. I think that going to a community that will embrace the game to a
It'll
place
be massive.
That is exactly you'll have this huge collection of foot traffic. It makes a ton of sense. We've tried to put a square peg in a round hole. We've tried to go to places in major championships that can't necessarily facilitate a major, and you have to park on another golf course, or you have to get shuttled in, and it's very hard logistically to get there. That will not be a problem here.
No, it won't. And they've got 8,000 in the tank if they need it.
You want to go tip that thing out?
Nope.
Woof. That is the end of part one. Part two, what time will Johnson get squeamish about how long part two is? We'll have to stay tuned.